Yes, say hi, hello, and welcome inside a Tuesday edition of the show, Power Talk of Muncie, WMUN. Lots of basketball to talk about, a little baseball, and some Ball State talk coming up at 4:40. It is a Tuesday. That means Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News will stop by the program. So looking forward to that conversation as we always do. But first things first, it is an anniversary day. I mean, it's wild to think that we've been doing this 6 years. 6 years today is when we began this crazy journey back in 2018 to do a daily sports talk show in this town, and we haven't stopped for 6 years. Man, oh man, lots happened in 6 years. You know, back in April of that year, that was coming off of what was a great run for the Indianapolis Colts. And then we went into that offseason with the most crazy story you'll ever see with Andrew Luck retiring. I mean, that's kind of how we started with things just a couple of 3 months in. And crazy that, you know, I think back as well to that April, too. We went into, I mean, we started the Daily Show in April, going into what is a very, very quiet time in Indiana sports. So, anyway, it's been a heck of a fun run for 6 years. We're continuing. We're rolling. We're continuing to do it better than ever. And that's always my message to you. Is that we're going to do it bigger and better, and that's what we're going to do starting today, I guess. I guess this is when it starts for year number 7. Wild, wild stuff, but a big thank you to the listeners, sponsors, etc. I know I said it yesterday, and a lot of that same messaging applies to this particular program. But we have a lot of people in this community that value local sports content, and this is impossible without them. So thank you for all of those that make this show possible. Since I went into a long soliloquy yesterday, we won't stay on the topic much longer today. But I will say this. Cities of this size don't have this outlet. Often you're taking the sports content from the larger city in the state or the one that's very close to you. And I just got to tell you, not that, you know, we want to pat ourselves on the back, but we're darn proud to do this in a town of our size and have the sports content each and every day that we do on this particular show. We're proud of that. Because we do want to kind of, and I guess the words are dare to be different. That's what we want to do. So we're making it happen each and every day, and here we roll into year number 7, I guess. I mean, wild. I don't know where the first 6 years went, but here we are. We've had a heck of a lot of stories that we've covered, a heck of a lot of different things that have occurred in the last 6 years, and it'll only get bigger and better as we look to be better than ever. As we say each and every day going forward. So on the year number 7, here we go. Last night, Caitlin Clark was flat-out ridiculous as Iowa defeated LSU. We're going to talk a little bit about her effect coming up in a moment. Pacers roll against the Brooklyn Nets, and the chase is on for that sixth and final secure playoff spot. Again, a lot is going to be determined this week for the blue and gold. We'll dive into that topic as well. It was announced today the reclassifications in the IHSA, and there's a couple of little things that I do think make a difference for a couple of local schools. We'll give you those reclassifications coming up, and then, of course, Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News will stop by the program. At Mark WMUN on Twitter is the way to reach us today, but here's what I was thinking about last night as Caitlin Clark dropped 41 points. It's more likely than not she's going to be the number one overall draft pick and ultimately be a member of the Indiana Fever. And, you know, I was sitting back, and there were a couple of things that really stood out to me last night, okay? You know, the rivalry between LSU and Iowa, you can thank the Golden State Warriors. And here's why I say that. Steph Curry influenced Caitlin Clark, and the antics of Angel Reese were, I think, in part due to athletes like Dennis Rodman and Draymond Green. And, you know, that's the first thing that I thought about last night. The second thing I thought about last night is this, and watching her. And by the way, I've watched not enough of her and not enough of, you know, really good women's college basketball, other than Ball State women's basketball, as we followed their run throughout the year. But here's what strikes me about Caitlin Clark that I think people may not realize. You know, basketball is a game of structure, and it feels like basketball has gone more and more towards the realm of unstructured play, which I guess makes you freelance as a guard, right? And that's why when we've gotten to 4 or 5 guard lineups, it's not to say you're unstructured or undisciplined, because structure and discipline seem to be interconnected, but there's a certain structure that when there's always, you know, a forward or a big man in the men's game, that there was a structure to it. Hey, somebody's going to play in the middle of the defense. Somebody's going to be posting up, and you always have that opportunity to repost, get out, and that's what Purdue's experiencing in this NCAA tournament. NC State's doing the exact same thing, etc. That used to be commonplace in basketball. And then we got to the point where now it's a very perimeter-oriented game. But when that happened, the way that you space the floor, the way that you attack offensively, it's not just 4 guards attacking the rim, it's the spacing. You know, you hear that often. Hey, we got to have great spacing, because you want to have 4, maybe even 5 players on the floor that can shoot. And spacing has overtaken what we described as the, you know, the traditional center power forward, small forward who is really a second guard, shooting guard, and point guard. It's positionless basketball now. But there's more that comes to that. And, you know, I want this to come across as respectful, okay? This is by no means a criticism, because the structure is different, but man, does Caitlin Clark have the ability to freelance for Iowa. They literally, not that they don't run sets, not that they don't get you know, different players in different positions to be successful, because that would be a discredit to the coaching staff. But the system is Caitlin Clark. It's really amazing at the collegiate level to see that, because if you think of the top recruits in the country, you know, Cooper Flagg's the top recruit for the men's side coming in next year. He's going to Duke to play for John Shire and to play for Duke. Okay? I would be hard-pressed to say that the system is going to be centered around him. Okay? The system wasn't centered around Zion Williamson. College is different that way. You go to play for the program. You go to play for that style. And oftentimes, coaches and programs recruit and bring guys in that fit their style. Would you say that the guys that Danny Hurley has for UConn fit his style? I would say so. For Purdue and Matt Painter, he does a great job in the state of Indiana, but he brings guys in that fit his system, okay? And it feels like part of the reason this movement with Caitlin Clark is so popular is because the system is her. The Iowa system is her. They give her the ability to freelance. They give her the ability to take threes as soon as she steps across half court. I was talking to a coworker of mine a moment ago, and there were a couple of cringeworthy shots. But you know what? That's how Iowa has won. That's how Caitlin Clark has become successful. And you give that leeway when she's hitting shots like she did last night. She had 9 threes, 41 points, and it just felt like she was unguardable, because the defender gets too tight. She can blow right past him, kick it out to another shooter. And by the way, you've got to give an immense credit to her supporting cast last night. As much as Caitlin Clark drops 41 points, 13 rebounds and 7 assists, or whatever it ended up being, it was made possible by the shots and the plays made by her supporting cast. But I don't know if you'll ever see this again at any level of collegiate basketball, where a player is the system, is the freelancer, is the structure, it's really interesting to watch. It really was last night, because the amount of times the ball has to touch her hands in a half court set, you know, if the look isn't there the first time to reverse it, and she's a really good passer. But I was just marveled at, man, this Iowa system is built around Caitlin Clark. And you might be thinking to yourself out there, well, duh, she's the best player. But oftentimes, the best player isn't the system. Like, I'll tell you this, UConn's system is Danny Hurley and their system with the five players they have on the floor. Purdue might be the closest thing to this with Zach Edey. Zach Edey's the system. Zach Edey's the structure. Zach Edey kind of dictates how a game's going to go or not go for Purdue in a lot of ways. So maybe Edey and Caitlin Clark are very similar in that way, and Purdue kind of does that. But, you know, they rely on Braden Smith at times, Fletcher Lawyer, etc. I don't know if there's been a time where Caitlin Clark set an off game and Iowa succeeded. Because she's the structure, she's the glue that holds that all together. And, man, oh, man, she was a lot of fun to watch last night, no question about it. Iowa moves on to the Final Four. But this is the other thought that I wanted to have an extended conversation about on the show today. So, by now, we expect Caitlin Clark to be the number one overall draft pick for the Indiana Fever, and she's going to come to Indiana. And obviously, the excitement builds. I think season tickets, their price has skyrocketed three times. I think season tickets may even be sold out with the anticipation of her coming here. So from a regional perspective, there are no concerns. Because Indiana, of a lot of environments, is going to welcome all of this and probably be the perfect fit if it ultimately ends up being that way. And again, all signs point to Indiana being the landing spot, and that's going to occur here in a couple of weeks, believe it or not. But it just made me think about this, okay? It's really interesting to watch the fascination and the attendance skyrocketing for games that include Caitlin Clark. Now, last night, LSU in Iowa was a rematch of last year's national championship, and it feels like we've been in this year-long kind of quest to get back to that point. And so this journey started last year at this time. It's been a full year of this, and every place she goes, it gets sold out. Every place she goes, there's lines out the door waiting to get in there. And I'll tell you this from personal experience, and this is my opinion, and again, people may differ on this because others enjoy going to the men's college basketball March Madness side of things. But my dad and I went to the first round and second round games back in 2015, so about 9 years ago, and we went to two different sites. And this was our conclusion after that experience. Yeah, it was fun. It was kind of cool to see, two games in one venue and do it again. But you miss the ability to watch everything. You miss the ability to see everything at once. And I got to tell you, the Elite Eight games had very high ratings. But I don't know if you would have noticed the attendance being anything other than average. Actually, at the beginning of some of those games, you're kind of saying, wait a second, there's empty seats right near the floor. That wasn't the case last night with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and Iowa versus LSU. Not at all. It's the exact opposite. Now, that particular game in itself was a little bit separated from the rest of the tournament. It was the rematch of all rematches that everybody wanted to see with Iowa and LSU. Everybody wanted to watch it. Everybody wanted to see the chess match, etc. You know, the Kim Mulkey side of things. There's so many different storylines that exist there. And by the way, the rivalry that Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese seem to have at college can absolutely be adapted to the WNBA. But my question is this, okay? And I liken it to baseball a little bit. Baseball, when they've had opportunities to market young stars, has continuously failed. year after year. They have young talent on young talent on young talent. Now, from a regional perspective, baseball does very well. Cincinnati's on fire right now with how they feel about their young team. The Dodgers, regionally, with Shohei Ohtani now being a part of their team. The Texas Rangers after winning a World Series. But you don't see the national attention like you used to with baseball. And it's always been a problem. They haven't fixed it. And it's amazing when you think about the young stars in the game, and you have, you know, right in the prime of their careers in their mid-20s. And I would imagine when you would walk down the street and see some of these players, people would walk right past them because baseball hasn't done a good enough job to do it. Now, it's similar but different. This crossed my mind last night watching that game last night. And by the way, Caitlin Clark is 80% of this. So Caitlin Clark is going to bring a following regardless, okay? But Paige Beckers is also in this mix. You have Angel Reese, who's made a name for herself, and maybe some people like her, maybe some people don't. But you know what? That actually does pretty darn well in sports. If you think about it, it actually is a benefit for the sport to kind of have a semi-villain, right? My question is this. Is the WNBA ready for this? Is the WNBA, and what I mean when I say is the WNBA prepared for this, the WNBA has not had this much attention on a particular draft class in history. You know, the attention around Clark, the attention around Reese, and those sorts of things. And from a marketing standpoint, you would think this being dropped in their lap as a league, as an organization, is something that just naturally takes over on its own. But at the end of the day, as we've seen in other sports, you know, you could just as easily just sit back and say, well, we've got all these very talented 20-year-olds, and it's going to take over on its own. I'm very curious how the WNBA maximizes this, because what I don't have any concern about is that regionally there's not going to be ability to market this. If the Indiana Fever end up getting Caitlin Clark, that's going to be easy. They already know how to do it. And from a regional standpoint, you're good. You're absolutely good. But it feels like the WNBA has a real opportunity here to be in the national conversation even more forward than ever. I'm just going to be curious, because your window to bridge the gap from college basketball with this group of talented draft class as this is going to be immediately coming up this year. And if you don't take that opportunity and run with it, that momentum can quickly subside. I don't think it's going to be a problem with Caitlin Clark. I think she's going to sell out places. I think people are going to want to go see her. No question about it. But you have an entire draft class here that can transform your league. How do you do it? How do you maximize the momentum that you clearly have that's dropped right into your lap as a league? I'm extremely curious, because they have never had this opportunity like they do right now. And there's no knowing if this opportunity will come again. So, you know, the WNBA is going to have a real deal here where they're going to be in the spotlight, and they can quickly lose that momentum if they're not careful. So I'm very curious about it, because that's what stuck in my mind last night. You know, it feels like it was a little bit of Warriors Cavaliers last night between LSU and Iowa. You know, maybe Magic Johnson and Larry Bird didn't exactly trash talk each other in the 79 national championship game, Michigan State versus Indiana State, but the NBA was able to maximize, and I guess it happens to be Celtics Lakers where the two players landed, and that certainly helps with two of the more iconic franchises, but the NBA leaned into that. They did. They leaned into it, and they used that momentum in a time, by the way, where the NBA was struggling. They found a way to bridge that gap. And I'm just so curious because it feels like the craving for the Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark rivalry, the WNBA has an opportunity coming up. And you know why this is relevant? Because Caitlin Clark is likely coming to the Indiana Fever. So the national perspective is going to be very interesting. From a local perspective, I don't think there's going to be any problems. Like I've said, I think the Indiana is so well equipped to make this happen, but it'll become the difference for the WNBA. Are they going to be Major League Baseball? Or could they be the NBA when you get to marquee games? I think that there's a real difference there because Major League Baseball has been regionalized. The WNBA has a real opportunity to not just be regionalized. Because I remember when the Indiana Fever won the WNBA championship, when Tamika Catchings was here, regionally, there was a lot of coverage about it. There was a lot of talk about it. There was a lot of analytical breakdowns of it all on sports talk radio. And that's going to exist as long as Caitlin Clark is a member of the Indiana Fever, absolutely. But they have a real opportunity to jump into the national conversation. They really, really do. And it's because of the unique circumstance with this deal. And I think it goes beyond Caitlin Clark. Because I don't know if you noticed last night, but people after the loss for LSU and the win for Iowa, I think people were more interested in what Angel Reese had to say after the game than what Caitlin Clark had to say after the game. I know I was. I wanted to see what Angel Reese had to say at the end because there was a lot of talk in the media, and then she loses. What does she say? And you know what? That seems to be the case in the NBA when LeBron loses an NBA Finals. Do you want to hear from Steph Curry who just won the title? Or do you want to hear from LeBron and what he has to say in another NBA Finals loss? You wanted to hear about what LeBron had to say. So it spans not just the Caitlin Clark deal. It spans further than that. And that's what stood out to me yesterday. Last night, it stood out to me, hey, how is the WNBA going to maximize this as a league deal? And I think they have a real opportunity, and I think that should be an immediate curiosity. So I think it was a great night for basketball in general last night, but ultimately, the WNBA can maximize this, and man, what an opportunity. What an opportunity they have as a league. It's their golden ticket. To be in the national conversation, I think they can take that opportunity and run with it. If they do it right, don't follow baseball, man. I tell you that much. Thanks to those of you joining us on Facebook Live. I hate to always say that about baseball. I do. But have you seen anything change with the way they market their talent, the way they promote their league? It almost feels like they've resigned to the fact, like, yeah, we're not going to compete with the NBA and NFL, so might as well just be great in local markets, which they are. They're great in Cincinnati. They're great in Pittsburgh. They're great in L.A. Yeah, Chicago Cubs, Wrigleyville. Yeah, I mean, that entire neighborhood is wrapped around the Chicago Cubs' finger. But from a national perspective, not so much. Feels like the last big year, the last national interest year from a baseball standpoint was when the 2016 Cubs won the World Series. From that point on, it's been kind of, oh yeah, hey, the baseball playoffs are going on. Just kind of a mandatory, hey, we've reached that point of the schedule. Not that you really, really want to talk about it. And that's too bad. I mean, it flat out is. That's just too bad. It really is. So, anyway, all right, a lot of basketball talk to discuss. We'll talk IHSA realignment as well. Kyle Smedley, Ball State Daily News, coming up here in a bit. We're back with you next on The Power on a Tuesday here on the Talk of Muncie, WMUN. Yes, welcome back inside the program, Power Talk of Muncie. The new WMUN is always brought to you by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road in Muncie, online, wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you, 48 hours or less. That's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference on Nebo Road right here in Muncie and online at wallsfurniture.com. Glad you're with us on the program. As always, you can interact at MarkWMUN on Twitter. Anytime. Pacers had a nice win last night, again, taking care of the Brooklyn Nets. And at the end of the day, and they've won three out of their last four, it's got to make you feel good. You're playing some of your better basketball heading into the most important time of the year, whether that's in the play-in, whether that's obviously with a secure playoff position. Pacers right now hold on to the sixth seed. They are a game ahead of the Miami Heat and 2.5 ahead of the Philadelphia 76ers. So with the Pacers at 43-33 and six games remaining, it really feels like it's going to be between them and the Miami Heat for the sixth and final playoff spot, which it just so happens the Indiana Pacers see the Miami Heat in a couple of days. Now, Pacers have played two more games than have Miami, so Miami does have more games to play than does Indiana to end the season. So Miami has eight games in the final couple weeks. Pacers only have six remaining. So I like less games because it means it's fewer to possibly maybe affect your standing. But that game between Miami and Indiana is going to be huge, big time, especially as Miami wins, Pacers win, as Miami it feels like the Pacers lose. They're kind of in this dance separated by just a game at this point. So a much-needed win last night. And by the way, the Pacers play the Brooklyn Nets again coming up tomorrow night as they go on the road for this one and have the Nets there. So the Pacers are going to play the Heat coming up on Sunday. Sunday's 5 o'clock is the matchup for Indiana versus Miami. So between that time, Pacers have a game with Brooklyn coming up tomorrow on the road. And then on Friday evening, they have a matchup at home against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, the Miami game is at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, so that helps to certainly be at home, where the Pacers have been a really good home team this year. I think only the Boston Celtics and maybe the Milwaukee Bucks are the only two teams that have had a better home record in the Eastern Conference than have the Indiana Pacers. So, again, at the end of the day, playing at home certainly helps you, certainly makes a big difference with everything going on there. So we'll continue to break down what's going on with the Indiana Pacers and really start to get into a lot more detail about exactly what's going on with the Indiana Pacers. Today, the new classifications for the IHSA came out, and they included several sports, included boys basketball, girls basketball, football, girls volleyball, boys soccer, and girls soccer. Now, to explain where we've come on the new classifications for the IHSA. So obviously in football there's six classes, in basketball and volleyball there are four classes. To kind of give you a perspective, I believe the same is the case in soccer. So it usually was, hey, if you hit this enrollment number, you're in 4A. If you hit this enrollment number, you're in 3A, et cetera, et cetera. They went to a percentage basis type of deal. So I believe it was 20, 20, 25, and 25 as far as percentage. So from 4A down to 1A, because 1A and 2A schools make up the majority of the schools in the IHSA classifications for these particular sports. Just to give you a little bit of background, there wasn't a ton of movement, but here's a couple of them. So this is for boys and girls basketball and volleyball. Westdale had moved up to 2A a couple of years back. Monroe Central in Randolph County, but obviously we talk about them a lot because they're right there on the border of Randolph and Delaware. Monroe Central and Westdale will move down to 1A from 2A. Now, and it's crazy how the previous system worked. I mean, Westdale, I believe, was the last to move up to 2A at the time they moved up to 2A. It was absolutely wild how just a few students here or there made a huge, huge difference as far as the difference between 1A and 2A. And again, going down to 1A, I think is a good move for both schools. Now, here's the one that's very, very interesting. And again, because of the percentage basis, it is kind of interesting. Yorktown has more enrollments than does Delta. And because of that, not just because of that specifically, but a large part of the reason, there, I believe, 812 students. Yorktown in football is going to move from 3A up to 4A. And here's the crazy part about it. Yorktown and Delta had faced each other in the last two football state tournaments as they were in the same sectional each of those past couple of years. Well, as it holds right now, Yorktown could likely be in the same sectional as Muncie Central, but they will not be interlocked with Delta. So Yorktown will be a 4A school. Delta stays at 3A. Very interesting that way. And it does provide some interesting deals in a lot of ways. I think here's the most interesting part about it, is that the HHC is going to prepare Yorktown for this. And by the way, I think I have this wrong. So I'm gonna look this up real quick because I think I misspoke on this. Let's take a look. So Yorktown up to 4A. Well, I guess I didn't. Delta was a 3A school a year ago. They are a 3A school again. Yorktown moves up from 4A to 3A. I thought I had that wrong. I did not have that wrong. So Yorktown and Delta had faced each other in the last couple of tournaments anyway. The fact of the matter is, the HHC is going to help Yorktown to prepare for the tournament, but it is kind of going to be an awkward situation, a little bit different, because typically we've always kind of paired Delta and Yorktown together in most sports because they're very similar in enrollment and they're rivals. They're in the same conference, etc. But now they're going to be in different classes from a football perspective, and it's going to be interesting. Very interesting for Yorktown. The difference between 3A sectional and 4A sectional is going to be different, but it is going to include likely a lot of HHC schools. Muncie Central could be a part of that as well, so there will be some familiarity. But anyway, that's a decent move, a decent difference as it comes down to that. So more coming on that as we get more information through the coming months. So all right, when we come back, Kyle Smedley, Ball State Daily News, he covered the Wapahani boys basketball state run. Will also dive into some Ball State topics as well. It's coming your way next. Power Talk among CWMUN. Yes, welcome back inside the program. Power Talk of Muncie, WMUN, is always brought to you by Sheriff Gosselin Roofing. Your roofers there to protect your family. Make sure you're doing all you can to protect them. Sheriff Gosselin Roofing has been helping families for generations. Remember to call Pete Dahlia or look them up at worryfreeroof.com, as we're glad to be joined by Ball State Daily News sports reporter. It is Kyle Smedley with us. Well, I saw you at Gainbridge Fieldhouse on Saturday, and you had a lot of coverage last week with Wapahani, and obviously the boys basketball side of things. Tell us a little bit about the story, being a part of that, et cetera, Kyle.
Yeah, no, it was good to see you down there, and it was interesting just because I actually – you know, normally I'm just doing coverage for either the Ball State Daily News or the Herald Bulletin, or, you know, this summer I'll be doing coverage for the Indy Star, just kind of traditional journalism type stuff. But this was different just because Matt Luce, the head coach of Wapahani, actually approached me and offered me, I guess, a position just for the weekend only, where I would go around and take video of the team Friday and Saturday. So for their send-off at the high school, I took videos of that. Took video a little bit on the bus before they left. And then Saturday, I took video of their practice at Christus Attucks High School in the morning, and then kind of chronicled their warm-ups and some game footage, and then the after-game footage where Isaac Andrews was honored with the Mental Attitude Award and the team got their medals. And it was just different because I had never really done video before, so I was just doing video the whole time. I didn't do any writing, and for this instance, I was actually working for the team rather than working for an organization covering the team, and that makes a big difference. It was definitely a good experience for me, and it was just interesting to see a different side of Wapahani, and, you know, you're more focused in that aspect and covering community aspects like the cheerleaders, the band, the student section, and Wapahani ended up losing, but they had a lot of really good support from the community along the way.
So from covering it from that angle, you get to kind of get inside the program, get inside the conversations with the team, players, etc. What stood out most about this group that maybe the community may not know, or maybe a reinforcement of what they already knew, Kyle?
I just think from my perspective, this team is very, and I'm sure people know this just from watching them, very focused, but I don't think that they took themselves too seriously. And what I mean by that is, you know, when it was time to practice and time to play, you know, they weren't making jokes, they weren't doing anything like that. They were completely locked in and focused on everything. Something that stood out to me was they have this drill where at the beginning of their practices, people split off into pairs and they're shooting at different goals. One person's shooting, the other person in the group is rebounding and passing to the shooter. And on every shot, the rebounder is saying, you know, make or miss. They're saying, nice shot. And then they're calling them out by name and giving them the pass. So let's say we've got Isaac Andrews. The rebounder would go, nice shot, Isaac. And then as they pass the ball, they say Isaac again. And I think that that just creates a bond with everyone on the team where you're making the conscious effort to say their name. And so that makes the connection right there. And I think that in such a small community, that really goes a long way as far as relationships go, because everybody on the team knows everybody inside and out. The families know each other. And that's just what stands out to me about Wapahani, and it's what's always stood out to me about Wapahani.
It's Kyle Smedley, Ball State Daily News. Did a lot of coverage of the Wapahani boys basketball team last week and heading into the state championship on Saturday as well. It's been a little quiet on the Ball State men's and women's basketball front, and we're about to approach a little bit of a dead period in the portal as well. Would you expect over the course of this week we might get some news of some other additions or activity or anything along those lines?
I mean, it's always possible. I never really expect anything, just because I mean, you always have to be on your toes. So I'm always ready for something to happen as far as coverage goes, but I'm never out and out expecting anything unless I'm given a lead or a tip or anything like that. And I haven't been given anything, whether someone's leaving or coming. I have no inkling. And so I'm just kind of approaching my role now as obviously we know that the team's not set. There's not enough members of the roster, but I have no idea who's coming in or out.
Right.
And so I would just, I guess, stay posted like I am. I've still got my post notifications on social media for different outlets who announce every portal move. And so I'm staying staying as informed as I can, but I'm not necessarily expecting anything.
Yeah, it's hard to know because of how long the portal is open, that when there's a dead period, there's a dead period for everyone. So do teams, and I think that we're so early into this, we don't really know the answer to this question because every cycle seems to kind of put a life of its own in a lot of ways, and that being, when you get to the first dead period, do teams kind of panic and want to make a commitment right there, or do they feel like, hey, we've got time, and just like the player has time, we have time? And that's what I'm curious to see, if there's an influx at the end of this week, next, before we hit that designated dead period.
I was going to say, I think that the dead period isn't quite there yet, just because I think that you still have programs who are just now starting to have their players declare their entry into the portal, because a lot of these March Madness games have determined whether a season is going to continue or end for a team. I've seen more transfer portal news from teams like Illinois or Arizona just because their season just now ended, and so their players are entering the transfer portal. And with that said, I think that if I were a coach, I would want to try to get my team as assembled as possible as early as possible, just so I can know what I'm working with. However, with the landscape that we're in nowadays, you just never really know, and so I think you have to prepare for anything. And so with that being said, I wouldn't hit the panic button during a dead period, and if I know Michael Lewis, I don't think he's going to hit a panic button either.
Yeah, no question about it. It is Kyle Smedley, Ball State Daily News. The baseball team got a nice win earlier today in a rain-shortened outing. Had a big series over the weekend with Ohio, and certainly didn't have a great start in Mid-American Conference play, but ultimately, knowing that the series that are about to come up are as important as any, speaking of panic, not time to panic for Ball State baseball, I would imagine.
Yeah, and this is what I'll say just about this program. Just with Rich Maloney as the head coach, they're never really going to have an out-and-out bad year. That's what I've learned over my experience covering the team, just because he never does hit the panic button. Over the past two seasons when I covered them, there were losing streaks, and that's just baseball. I think that people who know baseball know that losing streaks happen, and it's the teams who are able to stay calm throughout those losing streaks and turn them into positive as far as learning lessons go. I think Ball State has proven that they've been able to do that these past two seasons, and I know that their team doesn't look the same as it did even last year when they won the MAC tournament, but they've got a lot of the core pieces still around, like Decker Scheffler and Hunter Dobbins, and from what I know, they've got a lot of good young pitchers who have come in the absence of some guys that either transferred or graduated or got drafted. And so with these big series coming up, MAC play is huge in baseball, especially, you know, we always say you never know what can happen in the MAC when we're talking about football or basketball. Same is true in baseball, so it'll be fun to watch.
It's Kyle Smedley, Ball State Daily News. Lots still to cover, even with a little bit of a small hiatus of daily news, I guess, related to Ball State sports, but that'll pick up as the spring and summer roll along. Kyle, as always, we appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Mark. Just want to let you know, and I guess those out there listening, Ball State football's got its spring game this Saturday, and our team will have coverage of it, so I'll be out there.
Outstanding. That's Kyle Smedley from the Ball State Daily News with us. Appreciate his work. Speaking of things coming up, Thursday, our show is live from Perfect Fit Plus in downtown Muncie for the Eye in the Sky event. Our show from 4 to 5, the Eye in the Sky, Eye the Sky event from 5 to 6 o'clock as well. So from 4 to 6, we're going to have some fun at Perfect Fit Plus in downtown Muncie. The first Thursday Arts Walk is that same time as well, so we look forward to seeing a lot of you out there talking some sports, fitness, etc. That's coming your way on Thursday for sure. So that'll do it for us on this Tuesday edition of the program. Thanks to Kyle Smedley. Thanks to all those of you for joining us. Can't believe it's been 6 years we've been doing this, going on to year number 7. We can't wait. We got a lot coming this spring and summer. We're back with you tomorrow, same time, same place, 4 o'clock here on WMUN.